Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 568 for comics originally released on June 27th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Astro City number 52, which, unfortunately, is the final monthly issue of this. It's going to original graphic novels after this, starting next year.
Yep.
How long have you been reading Astro City?
Believe it or not, I hadn't read Astro City very long until this series, but I went on to eBay. This was a long time ago, and I picked them all up except for that Dark Ages spinoff because I heard that was no good.
I wouldn't say it's no good. I would say it's not the high point of the series. It was, to me, it went on too long, but it's still worth reading because it fills out the universe and such.
Okay. Well, that's the only part I've missed. Other than that, I've read everything Astro City, and I've really enjoyed it. It's kind of like a flashback to the way comics used to be made almost.
It is. It's funny because I think there's an iconic, classic, almost, I'm going to say 80s kind of vibe to it, but it's timeless, so it resonates with a lot of different periods in comics. But it's also something that, while it's got that archetypal sense to it, it's a different vantage point on superheroes, often
yes.
Focusing, you know, it focuses on the regular people, the behind-the-scenes kind of stuff, the less obvious corners of the universe, if you will.
Exactly. And Busiek, he started going down that path with Marvels way back when he wrote that at Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just carried on that legacy. And so many people have enjoyed it. I am sad to see the monthly issues going away. And I'm curious to see how frequently the OGNs come out.
Yeah, I'm curious how frequently the page count, the price.
Exactly.
And if it gives them the ability to almost do like a mini series at once.
Definitely. And one thing I have really enjoyed, like, this is the 52nd issue, the last issue that's coming out. And this ties into stuff that's happened in previous issues of Astro City. But if you never read that, this will make sense to a new reader, which is the way comics should be written.
The level of accessibility on this title is kind of outrageous because this is a continuation of a story from last issue. Yet if you'd come in cold, you can pick up what's going on.
Exactly. And I love that about Kurt Busiek. He's a great writer. He's in the upper echelon top writers out there in the comic industry. And then you have Alex Ross, who does the cover art, which is amazing. And the interiors are amazing, too. This is just a great all-around comic.
Well, and the interiors by Brand Anderson, he's been doing it the entire, I don't know, 20 years or however long Astro City's been going off and on.
Which is just crazy. Those three guys stuck together that long.
I mean, they've had a few fill-in artists here and there, but not that many. And while this is issue 52 of this run, it's over 100 issues of the whole thing.
Oh, easily over 100. And this one was I guess you could say, a touching way, an emotional way to end. It didn't end on the high note or of like a big action sequence or a big battle or a continuity change. But it ends exactly the way Kurt has written this thing, where talking about a person and their feelings and what's happened in his life.
Yeah, I liked how this story, it was centering around this guy who runs a support group for people kind of traumatized by superhero-related events.
Yes.
And he named it after his wife, Miranda. But the thing is, she was wiped out of existence a few years ago.
Correct. Almost like a crisis type event. Like there's a new timeline where she never existed in this timeline, but he remembers her.
Absolutely.
Which I can't imagine the pain of. I mean, you lose someone, but there's nobody to bury. You're the only one who knows. And as you've seen this, a lot of times people may not sympathize with you or empathize with you because they don't believe you.
In their mind, it's not as real of a loss as theirs.
Exactly, because theirs is tangible. They can go to a grave marker or pick up an urn or have family photos. And here she was just poof gone, which is completely different.
All he really has is the paintings he's done of her.
Yeah, which is so strange. And I like how they touched on when he he's finally kind of coming out to his group and talking to him because he's been so scared to share this mm-hmm. with other people and that they wouldn't believe him. And there are people who don't believe him or don't take his real, but the hangman, how he shows up to kind of confirm the story.
That was a classic scene because he shows up behind the guys. He's telling, it's like, yeah, I don't know why you'd believe me. It sounds implausible and I got nothing to back it up. And everybody just kind of has that stunned look. And he's like, what? And when he turns around, the guy's gone. But in that one panel, and it was great because the other panels in this page were inset on top of it.
Yes.
Yeah, but the hangman is just sitting there with his arms crossed like, yeah, what of it? It's like, what do you mean, like, you don't believe him?
You don't want to try me.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And you know, it's a traumatic event. It was nice that the superheroes, the honor guard, they have this fund apparently that's set up where they help the people out that they've kind of hurt and give them time to mourn and you know, deal with those feelings and issues.
It's funny because in that one panel, the hangman reminded me of Batman in terms yes. of attitude. And certainly that fund to go pay for this kind of stuff and to go take care of the people is also a very Bruce Wayne sort of a thing.
Definitely, definitely.
But they did it in a way that it didn't feel derivative and that it's funny because, I mean, the Confessor is really the Batman analog in this universe, sort of. It was just,
I would agree.
It was some nice moments in this. I at least felt for the guy. It's like, I get his loss. I get why he doesn't tell people. I get why they don't believe sometimes. It was a very down-to-earth emotional issue to end on. And there's something kind of ironic, I guess, about ending on a story about loss when we're losing the title.
Exactly. It was interesting in that didn't, you know, that's something I did recognize. I was like, he's almost sad to see this go and it will be disappearing from the racks, you know, and dealing with this loss and stuff, but maybe the money will be okay. DC will help him out a little bit, but it was also, there was a lot of other cool things that were in here. They gave the character the opportunity to forget or lose his memories in here. And given that chance, how many people out there would say, okay, I want to forget this and move on and live my life and maybe start a new family, meet someone new. And how many people would want to remember? And that was interesting because that was dealt with too.
Yeah. Yeah. It explored the situation fairly thoroughly and such.
Oh, yeah. It was very touching. And like you said, you cared about the character. Even though this character doesn't exist, you had an emotional connection because it's things that all of us can empathize with, or we can almost put ourselves in this person's shoes. What if that happened to me?
Yeah.
So I that's really powerful when you can write in such a way to make people put themselves in the character's shoes.
I'd really like to see this adapted to a TV series.
Oh, it would be amazing. I would love it. I mean, even if it was like a Netflix series or if it came out on the CW, I would love it because it would be really, if it was done well, this could be an amazing show.
To me, Netflix would be one of the better places for it because you need to have the right amount of time and space and not every story would film out to the same length or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you got the right, and the fact is you need different actors for different stories.
Exactly. You really do. And they could come back and make appearances from time to time, but they may sit there for 20 episodes before you see the person again, just like they do in Astro City. Hey, now something completely off the beaten path, sidetracking a little bit. What is DC's thing with 52? Like this issue, this stops on issue 52, the new 52. Why is everything 52? I don't understand.
I think 52 here just kind of worked out that way. I don't think it was because this is not a DC title.
Okay, it's like Vertigo.
But it's published by DC, but it's...
Yeah.
But DC, when they did the 52 weekly series, because there are 52 weeks in a year, that became kind of a thing, I think, for Dan Didio. And
exactly.
They've just kind of gone back to it time and time again.
Okay, so it's still there, and maybe he was just wrapping up and it just happened to be at 52. But it was just kind of like, well, that's interesting. What's the 52 deal?
Yeah, I think the fact that it worked out that way probably pleased a few people at some level at DC, but if it had been 51 or 50, if it had been 51, they'd have said, oh, come on, do one more issue, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to read this when they have the OGNs come out. This is something that I've been keeping current with. And the one thing that I really like about Astro City is, just like I said earlier, I can pick this up and I really don't have to know, or I don't have to remember what happened in the previous issue. You can pick this issue up, or issue 48 up, or issue 27 up, and enjoy that issue.
Absolutely. There are a couple of multi-issue arcs, but not that many. And even then, they're fairly accessible, like this is a good example. And even the previous issue felt like it had enough of a, okay, I've gotten a full issue, even if there's more to the story. It's one of those things that this, to me, is the epitome of a title that goes and explores a world.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, we've seen the mystical areas, we've seen the entertainment realm of, you know, of the industries and stuff here, the superheroic stuff, and the slice of life or whatnot. This is one that, I mean, maybe it's not for everybody or whatever, but if you want to see what really kind of can be done in a different direction, a more character-based kind of a thing with superheroes, this is an excellent title. And while I think The Dark Ages was, to me, it was three miniseries focusing on two brothers that went for like 12 issues. I would have liked it if they'd broken that up and given me a few other things in between. To me, that was a low point, but even the low point is better than most comics tend to get at a high point.
Wow. So I might have to go back and check out The Dark Ages then, because that's, like I said, the only thing Astro City that I have not read. Because I started reading the DC stuff. I heard you and Drew review Astro City. I started reading it. And then I went on eBay and picked up stuff. This was back when I was a DCBS customer and they don't have back issues. You know, now I could probably ask Eric to pick up things. So I just went and found somebody who had a run on eBay and just bought them all.
If you've been liking what you've been reading, I would say go ahead and complete the run. While I don't think it's necessarily as great as the other stuff, it's still good.
Oh, yeah. I've really enjoyed it. And Kurt Busiek is always one of my favorite writers. He's one of those writers that there's certain ones out there that no matter what they write, it's going to be okay to really good. And even on his bad issues, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And when he's on, it's really amazing, breathtakingly good. So you know you're going to get your money's worth.
I would say this is one of his crowning achievements. And keep in mind, this is the guy who's done JLA Avengers, some phenomenal runs on Avengers, on Thunderbolts, on, I mean, you name it. The guy's been around the block.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like he's got just a few things to his credit. He's done a lot both at Marvel and at DC and some other places. It's this, though, is I think, his passion project. And I really wish it was selling better. But yeah. It's a heck of a lot of fun. It's really well done, and I highly recommend it.
Oh, yeah. I agree. So what do you think about this issue? What are you going to grade it?
I'm going to go with an A+ on this. It did not disappoint. It ended on a good note, and it was an emotional story. I felt for the guy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, because it to make you care about a character who's not real, but you care about them like they are real, he can tap into the reader's emotion. And for any of you guys out there who have not read Kurt Busiek, give an issue of Astro City, just some random issue, see if it's for you, and if it's for you, you will love it. And I'm like you, I went with an A+.
I would like to see a few other creators do this sort of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Start with a blank slate, build your own superhero universe as you think it ought to be.
Oh, yeah. And I actually think he's doing it better than most. The only other place where I see that being done right now is over at Dark Horse, where you have Jeff Lemire with the Black Hammer stuff. And it's been pretty good. The art's way better in Astro City than the Black Hammer stuff. But the writing's been really good over there, too. But I'm more of an Astro City fan than I am Black Hammer, but I love Black Hammer.
I would just love to see some people like Mark Waid and maybe Peter David, a few others, build up their own universe of, I mean, if you think about it, Kurt Busiek has as many characters and whatnot that are, granted, they don't have hundreds and hundreds of issues each, but they're, frankly, surprisingly well-defined given how little they've appeared, that he could go spin off into a movie universe were he of a mind to.
Oh, yeah, he really could. He could have a movie universe, he could have a Netflix TV verse. He could have a lot of stuff, and the cool thing is that he owns this. This is his property. I mean, so hopefully we will see it. You know, Warner Brothers roll something out that we can enjoy on the big screen or the small screen.
I think it lends itself more to TV because it's got so many small stories.
Yeah, it's very episodic, and I could see it more of a TV than a movie for sure.
And it almost is enough of an anthology sort of TV series that I think you'd have to take a different approach to doing it than you would your typical kind of TV show.
Exactly, because it's not going to be this episode goes into this episode, it goes into this episode. You can almost watch each episode on its own. And what was that TV show that was like the Star Trek ripoff that recently was on TV? I can't remember.
It's Babylon 5. It's not a Star Trek ripoff, if that's the one you're thinking of.
No. It was the comedian.
The Orville.
The Orville. Yeah. That's a Star Trek ripoff. But the Orville was kind of like this in that the stories didn't carry over. Each one was its funny little comedic but sci-fi episode. It didn't carry from episode to episode, and I like that. And I could see him doing a thing like that where each episode can be watched and enjoyed on its own.
There were still enough things that connected them in terms of subplots and whatnot from episode to episode, but you're right. They were standalone and enjoyable on their own.
Yeah, like I missed two or three of them and I jumped in and I didn't feel like I missed anything, which was cool.
And that's the way to do accessible storytelling.
Exactly. We need more of that.
Absolutely. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Definitely.
This is Multiple Man number one, and this is one that I got some kind of mixed feelings on.
Okay.
Like the character. Honestly, if I were at Marvel greenlighting a Multiple Man book, I probably would say, okay, Peter David, what do you got for me? And this isn't written by Peter David.
No, it is not.
And that's okay. Other people have done Jamie Madrox just fine. This guy does an okay job. It's Matthew Rosenberg, I think, is the writer.
Yeah, Matt Rosenberg, and then we have the artist Andy McDonald.
The art was a little weak.
Yes, I agree. That was one of the things I wrote on here. It was not the strong point.
It was okay. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But I certainly don't know that anyone's going to be recommending this because, wow, you got to check out the art.
Exactly. It looks like a tier below like a normal Marvel book, just a little bit below.
Yeah. It's funny because when we got this group of X-Men, I'm pretty sure it's the group we'd seen over in the New Mutant stuff, but honestly, I don't think I've gotten past the first issue on that one because I'm way behind on my Marvel.
Exactly. It's the New Mutants, I forget the guy's name, the big one.
Strong
Guido.
Guy.
Yeah, Guido Strong Guy. Yeah, so you have him, you have all those characters from there who were into the supernatural stuff. So all those characters were brought over and they find Jamie Madrox.
The one with the pink glasses, that's Boom Boom, right?
Yes.
It's like, couldn't they have named her? I mean, come on.
They don't even name the people in here, so if you weren't reading that, that's a big miss. That's one thing where I understand people writing different issues, and I think Rosenberg wrote that issue, the other issue that we reviewed, but people aren't reading the whole line most of the time today. You know, you can't just expect they're going to know who this team is and who these people are.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a knock against it in terms of accessibility.
Exactly.
Naming the characters, kind of an obvious thing to do.
I agree.
This was one where the take they have on Madrox, where, you know, each dupe has its own kind of attribute or whatever, long ago established that was one of the things about it, and that this is what do they phrase it? The scientific side of him.
Exactly. I guess the smarter scientific side, yes.
Even if we go with smarter, I'm not sure how scientific of a side Jamie Madrox ever had, to be honest.
Exactly. He seems kind of like a goofball in here.
Goofball is a good description of the character. Good goofball,
Exactly. Not in a bad way.
Fun character, but I'm going to create a serum to do thus and so. Unless you're like mixing drinks, Madrox is not the guy for this.
Yeah, I don't know if I didn't have a PhD in chemistry or microbiology or something. I don't think I'd be mixing cocktails and testing them on myself.
There's something ironic about Hank McCoy, the Beast, asking Madrox, you ran experiments on yourself?
Exactly.
Because, of course, Hank's blue and furry because he experimented on himself.
Exactly. He's the guy who started it.
He's the poster child of don't do this.
Exactly. So he's scorning him and you know, admonishing him. Why are you doing this? And I did it myself.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. When we got to that bit where he's talking with Beast down in the lab, and yeah, we cut to him also going and talking to Ileana and some others, It was unclear to me at first if this was set at the same time because they're cross-cutting, if this is jumping a little forward or back in terms of time. I mean, the guy can be in multiple places at once, hence the name Multiple Man. But later, when we actually get some time travel involved, it does make this a little confusing.
It got very confusing, and this comic, it's funny in parts. There's a lot of jokes in here. There's some humorous parts. But he doesn't tell you in the past, now, when this is happening. So you have to give it almost a couple reads for it to start making sense, which is not a good thing, once again, for accessibility. But when I read it on the second go around, I was like, okay, it's making more sense now.
I could piece together what was going on, but it was more work than I felt I should have had to do.
Exactly. You're doing a mental jujitsu to try and figure out what's going on, because I was the same way. I'm like, what's going on? Why is he here? What? Oh, and then I was like, oh, this is what's going on.
When I had to be guessing as to kind of which team of X-Men had found him, who one or two of the members were, is this at the same time or a different time for some of the scenes? I mean, the story works. I'm not going to say it's fatally flawed or anything, but it felt like the writing could have been a little more straightforward and clearer, and the art could have and frankly should have been a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly because, like I said, when I have to read a book through sometimes a second time and then to make it more clear, that's not really a good sign. I mean, I was reading in detail, putting down some notes, but I was like, okay, what's going on here? Which one is this? Why is this happening? I mean, I can make sense the first time, but in the second read, it made a lot more sense. But even then, it's a little bit just confusing, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
What did you think of the twist on this thing at the end? That was weird.
It was funny because when I got to it, I'm like, what is going on with this? And then we get the reveal there, and I'm like, well, actually, given, you know, the outfit some of these guys were wearing, I should have seen that.
Exactly. After I saw that reveal, I was like, oh, yeah, look at the costumes. Look at the costumes. Then it'll make sense. But that was funny.
It was funny and it was good, but there was an aspect of this where I felt they were just kind of throwing stuff out there and we'll explain it later in the next issue or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. This was not the most accessible book. It's a little bit disjointed in the way it's written, and it's only a 5-issue mini, so I'm hoping he can pull it together. But right now it's a little weird. It is a funny book, but it's a little bit of a mess.
Yeah. It is, and you've got some of the standard storytelling tropes or whatever that if you stop and think about it, just make no sense.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I mean, some of these things that I saw in here, when that one character jumps out, I don't want to spoil this if anyone's going to read this, and there's an appearance and he has Wolverine claws. I was just like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah,
that was just weird.
There were a few where the characters get pulled out and I'm like, where did he come from and how or whatnot?
What's he doing here? I don't understand this. What's going on?
Well, and they've also got, you know, one of those scenes where somebody takes something that clearly is not going to provide the least bit of protection for them as a barricade. And sure enough, it holds up to an incredible onslaught.
Oh, yeah. So this comic struck me as a type where he's either going to wrap it up a little bit better and stick the landing, or it's just going to be a complete train wreck. And it could go either way right now.
Yeah, it could. I don't know which way it's going to go. I'm going to be around to find out. I like the character. The story is entertaining, even though it's not the strongest. Bottom line, I had fun with it.
I did, too. I mean, I laughed at a lot of the things in the comments that were in here. So anytime there's a funny book, it's good because not that I want them all funny. I like serious stuff, but it's nice when you go from something so serious in Kurt Busiek's book, which I was reading right before this,
mm-hmm.
to something so lighthearted, because it kind of gives you a refresher, a breather, going from one of those to the other.
Exactly. I wouldn't want all my books like, frankly, either of them, because if I was reading stuff as kind of, you know, as emotional or deep or whatever as that Astro City was all the time, it's like, geez, that takes a little more effort and whatnot to get through in a good way.
Exactly. And this was a palate cleanse after that. Not that it was in a bad way. It kind of refreshed. It's like lighter tone. And I liked the transition. It was just fun for me.
Yeah. For me, this was good. I was debating between a C+ and a B-, but I'm going to go with the B-. It's fun if you like the character. It's not the classic Peter David stuff, but it's still good.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This is awkward. I went with a B-minus too. It's like we read each other's notes before we came in tonight. But I liked it. I didn't love it. And I think he has a possibility of sticking the landing. So I'm definitely in for the full 5 issues.
I sure hope he sticks the landing. It'd be a shame to not.
Yeah, he made it funny enough for me to want to read more of it.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our other book?
For sure.
This is Charlie's Angels number 1 from Dynamite. This is a period piece book set in the 70s, the same time as when the show originally ran.
Blast from the past.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember watching the old show.
Me too. This was like, nostalgia was weird.
I've seen the movies. There was the revival TV show that lasted for almost a season. So, I mean, Charlie's Angels, I'm surprised, frankly, it took this long for somebody to be doing it as comics. There may have been one back in the day, although I don't recall one. Not that I ever looked.
I don't know of one.
This, I think, really kind of captured the tone and the style of the original TV series.
Yes, for sure.
It was a nice done-in-one story that looks like it's playing into a larger story.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting when we got to the title page, they essentially recreated the opening credits from the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they really did. It was so weird because the way this opened, the way it was introduced, and this is going back, for both of us, like 35-plus years or 40 years, I was a little kid. My mom would do the laundry, and I would watch his stuff, you know, mm-hmm. at home. And I remember my mom watched it. I would watch it. And there's only one TV in the house, so you watch Charlie's Angels. And the way it was set up and the way the little dialogue boxes, and then they showed the little voice box with the voice coming over, and you meet Bosley and Charlie. It was just weird because I couldn't believe that I could remember that stuff. I'd forgotten all about it.
Well, and again, they've clearly watched the show. They've taken what works. They've made some subtle tweaks to it. How when the story is starting, they're referencing the swinging 70s, the stylish 70s, the sexy 70s, the sexist 70s.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's like, hey, it was a fun time, but it wasn't perfect.
Exactly. And then they're like, and the steamy, seedy, sleazy 70s.
You know, they acknowledge the good and the bad, and they have some fun with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
This could have been all cheesecake, all style, no substance, but the story hung together. The art served the story, but it could have been better.
Yeah, it could have been better. This artist, I think his name was Joe Eisma. I don't know if you've read anything that he's drawn, but I remember him. He's done some of the Archie comics.
He also did Morning Glories, and he was awesome in there.
Oh, okay. Because I was reading the Archie stuff, and it did remind me of some of the Archie issues I've read, because his art was like this. So it's completely different from the Morning Glories then.
Let me rephrase. It's not that the art is bad. It's that I don't know that his style is necessarily the best fit for this.
Okay.
If I were going to pick an artist for this, one of the first people I would talk to would probably be Frank Cho.
Oh, yeah. I could see Frank Cho doing this for sure. Definitely Frank Cho. That would make it. And actually, you know what? They probably would have sold a heck of a lot more comics with Frank Cho doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, the cheesecaking nature of Frank Cho. But you know, speaking to that, this is done in a way where it was not cheesecakey at all. I mean, it was interesting, and it reminded me, it's almost like that Private Eye investigation type thing, serious with corniness tied mm-hmm. together. And yeah. That's exactly how the show was. So if you appreciated the show, or if you have nostalgia for the show, you'll probably like this comic. And for me, I just enjoyed that it could bring up these memories that I thought I had forgotten all about this stuff.
It felt like a episode of the TV show, maybe a short episode of the TV show.
Very short, yes.
But it had the beginning, the middle, the end. It had the scene with Charlie and the speaker box and stuff. They got out into the field, they solved the case, etc. And I liked that we got at the end of this issue enough of, okay, they've done something, and then there's a little more. We've got more to tell. This plays into a bigger story. But frankly, if they had stopped before doing that two-page kind of epilogue,
yeah,
it still would have been a good read.
Oh, yeah, it still would have been a good read. That was just another little bit of a teaser to keep you coming back. It kept you wanting a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I thought they did a really good job with this. I mean, this was the very light and breezy issue. Like, there was a lot more exposition in Multiple Man. There was a lot of exposition in Astro City, but that's every issue of Astro City. And this one, I mean, even though there's a lot of dialogue, it just felt like it flowed really quickly. It was almost too short. I wanted to read a little bit more.
I can see that. The only way I would disagree with you a little on Astro City is I think it was a bit more introspective than expository.
That's true. Introspection. Definitely introspection.
And that's a subtle difference. But here, with Charlie's Angels, we understood what was going on. And while there's a little up front of, hey, there's this thug taking over part of the nightclub or whatever, it's no more than you get during any start of any primetime procedural where they've got to explain the case.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this brought me back to sitting on the floor. Well, like I said, my mom was doing the laundry, and we would watch Charlie's Angel, and then I think Fantasy Island and Love Boat. I think those are the ones that I watched. Why did I watch those when I was a kid? I have no idea.
Because they were probably all on ABC back to back to back or something.
Exactly. And that you just kind of watched them like that. And I remember, you know, the plane, boss, the plane to this, you know. And I forgot about Mr. Bosley, but as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. Mm-hmm. But this is, if you are not a Charlie's Angels fan, this is something I think someone could read and they may appreciate it for what it is, which is just a quick little enjoyable crime solving issue, investigation.
Yeah, and that's different from some of the other adaptations of late. The Stargate Atlantis one, it came out like 10 years after the show ended, maybe 9 or whatever, but still. And it picked up right on the heels of it.
Oh, okay.
And when I first...
And that's impossible to pick up, jump on as a new reader.
I read the first one and I'm like, I can tell it picked up, but I don't remember where the show left off. And before the second issue came out, I rewatched that final episode, reread the first issue, read the second, and it's like, ah, now I get it.
And that really shouldn't be done, because who's going to remember what happened years ago at the end of a TV series? That's insane.
Exactly.
Especially something like Stargate, which wasn't, you know, breaking the charts as far as the number of viewers.
it did well for the Sci-Fi Channel, but yeah. And 10 years later, any show, even if it is topping the charts.
Exactly. Like 10 years from now, I probably will not remember what happened on Walking Dead on TV, you know, on the whatever episode, if they just picked it up 10 years later and dropped it today.
Exactly.
Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Well, you never know.
Yeah,
it would be funny for them to adapt that back to comics.
That would be hilarious.
This I thought was accessible. It was fun. It was well done. And if you understand the basic premise, even if you don't understand the premise of Charlie's Angels, they give it to you here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And this is a breezy issue. You can read it really quickly. I don't know. Some people may see that as a bad thing, you know, being $3.99. But, you know, every now and then I need a comic that I'm not going to have to sit there and work really hard to read.
This was light reading, but I didn't feel that it was insubstantial reading.
I agree. I would agree with that statement.
That's a key difference. I've read some comics where it feels like I'm reading the pages as fast as I can flip them.
Exactly. One like that would be that sci-fi series, I can't remember, by Niles that we reviewed, Delta 13.
Mm, yeah.
It did not have the material there to warrant $3.99. This does.
Yeah, I think this was fun. For me, I went with a B+ on it. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. I went with a B-. A little bit lower than you, so we're not completely exact same scores tonight.
What was it that kind of knocked it down a little for you?
With me, it was I was reading it and I liked it, but the only thing that I didn't like was that I don't know if it was after reading, maybe it felt like it was a little bit too light, like there wasn't enough substance there. Okay. I mean, there was enough, but it just felt like I breezed through it too quickly.
There's an aspect of no sooner than the case starts that it seems to end.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the only thing that knocked it down. Like, I would really have gone with a B, but it just felt like it could almost be read too quickly. And the case was over before that mid-section thing that they have with the Dynamite books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything was kind of wrapped up. I mean, of course, there's something else at the very end, but it was pretty much done. I was like, well, it just felt a little bit light.
I can see that. For me, I was able to deal with that in so much as it seems like the choice was either to do that or have this arc go for like 6 issues and we barely get out the door and start the case in
exactly.
This issue.
And you know, come to think of that, If those were the two options, I would prefer it this way. So now I kind of regret my B minus.
That's the thing, is it's not the two options. They could have gone some other ways with this.
Yeah.
You know?
But I do like the episode, or this issue that we read. I like that it's almost like a one and done, but it's not. It keeps enough to give you to the next issue, but it did wrap up this particular case.
Exactly. It had a sense of closure, but not finality.
Exactly.
No, I thought that was definitely a mark in its favor.
Overall, good stuff.
Yeah, some good stuff.
So, now, what are your thoughts about Kurt Busiek going to OGN?
Man, I got mixed feelings on that because it gives him a larger page count to tell some bigger stories that may not have serialized well. So that's a plus.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a longer period between releases. That's a negative. And it's going to be a bigger thing to kind of, you know, allocate the time to sit down and read.
Yeah, I was reading that. I'm so disappointed to see it go away from the monthly schedule, and but then I started thinking about you know, there's so many people that have been testing, you know, Greg Rucka was testing going to the bigger issues with Lazarus, you know, maybe going quarterly with his stuff coming out. And I think there's just a struggle here with getting the sales on the monthly side, but at the same time I'm kind of worried for these guys because there was a iFanboy episode where it had I'm trying to think of the guy's name right now.
Terry Moore.
That's okay. Time and Vine and et al. Strangers in Paradise. But he was talking about, you know, a lot of these writers, like you get to a Terry Moore or even a Kurt Busiek. I don't know how much he sells in the mass market. And he said, you know, I live off the single issues. You know, my income. And now Terry Moore is self-published, so he doesn't have a DC to write him a check or to fund him between the graphic novels. And he said the graphic novels are just kind of like a little extra icing on the cake or a little gravy on the side. He said, but my money, my income depends on these single issues. And he's selling around 7,000 issues a month. So it worries me for these guys with the, you know, shakiness and the so much output from Marvel and DC with the direct market and these small publishers. What's going to happen to these guys?
Yeah, and I see the desire to go to a bigger page count, a little bit more freedom in telling the story with an OGN and such, but it seems like you cut down the story momentum by doing bigger installments less often.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm there's times when stuff comes out and I forgot they were making that thing because they took too long between the singles.
Yeah. You know,
even that 2 month break at Image, sometimes I forget about the stuff. I start getting the comic again and shipments. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. I guess I ordered it again. But it's like you finish one issue and then 3 months later you get another one and I forgot what's going on.
There are some books that can handle that, but they're fewer and further between. Most creators don't have a sticky enough story for it to last that long between installments. I don't know what the right choice is because they're on the other end of the spectrum. If you go smaller page count more frequently, and that works better in like a digital realm than necessarily in print, there's only so small you can go before it's just not worth it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And another thing with these, and I'm going to use like Eric Powell, who does that. You know, he's a self-publisher, he has his own publishing, or Terry Moore. He has his own imprint. Those guys, they have to live off a single issue. And if the direct market was to poof, go away tomorrow, I don't know that people would pick up their stuff digitally. I don't know. I don't know if they'd cease to exist, because if I am Kurt Busiek with DC, a traditional publisher, like if I'm a book writer, I don't have to wait 3 years until I write a novel to get paid. They'll give you an advance. They'll say, hey, you're working on this. Okay, we want you to have it out. And they have milestones. You know, we want to see what you're working on. Make sure that you're actually working for the money so that you can actually live. And then if your book knocks it out of the park, you make a heck of a lot of money. And if not, you're working and living and creating content for the publishers. And there's a lot of people out there that I don't know if they could do that. And that's what I worry about.
I don't think the comic book reading audience is patient enough or has a long enough memory for too many projects to go to this straight to trade, the original graphic novel mentality.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's slow with things like the Earth One stuff out of DC.
Yes.
But there's other stuff getting us back to the stores every week.
Oh and yeah.
I used to go to the bookstore back when I was in college every week, go pick up a new Star Trek novel or a new sci-fi novel or whatever. But it got to the point where I would go, I'd come out empty-handed, and it's, well, I guess I don't really need to go next week. And then 2 weeks would go by. And then 3 weeks would go. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And we really are. And it's a habitual medium that we're in. I mean, we are creatures of habit. Every time I get my previews catalog, even if I want to cut back, I get so excited. I go and mark everything up, and I order more than I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Every month I do that, and then I like, oh, I really need to cut back. And I get the comics every week, and I read them, and then I buy too much stuff. I mean, it's weird. And if they ever stopped, if they ever didn't ship out a previews catalog, and I had to go online, and I wasn't getting the discounts, I would be gone. I'd be out, you know. And then I'd be depressed probably for 2 or 3 months, and then probably read my old stuff.
Well, I was going to say, if the output of these publishers just dried up for whatever reason, you know, the direct market just collapses due to some snafu or something, I'm okay for a good couple of weeks, probably a month or two, just with the amount of backlog I've got, so I'm not real worried about it.
Exactly. You have 500 comics to read.
Oh, not quite. Almost. It's almost. 477 maybe, but yeah.
You're coming up there.
I'm getting up there, and I'm probably going to exceed 500 before too long.
And I'm with you. I have probably 1,000 graphic novels. I'm ingesting when I say that, but I have piles of them that I could read. It would take me a while.
I have stacks and stacks and stacks of hardcovers and trades and whatnot that I could read.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it went away, I'd still be reading, and hopefully by then there'd be something coming out. But I don't think doom and gloom, everything's going away. But I kind of think we do need to get some more readers in there. So some of what DC's doing is good, but then it kind of ticks me off that the speculators are going out there and buying up all these $5 things and selling them on eBay. That ticks me off to no end.
The Walmart comics?
Yeah, the Walmart deal. It, you know, like, they're already specking them and selling them for $20 to $60 on eBay, and people are buying everything that Walmart has. It's insane. That's not what it's intended for. So, anyways.
And I agree with that. I think people speculating them to flip them and stuff like that is not right.
Yeah, I
agree. That having been said, would you pick up a set if you had the chance?
I thought about it, but I've read most of the material in there. So I'm more, because I have so much to read, I'm more inclined to, I'm just going to pick up the trade, which they said they're going to come out with, of just the original content, because I'm not into the speculation. I'm not into these things have value. I'm into the story. So I'm going to pick up the trade when it comes out through Cowabunga, get a nice discount, and just have all the stuff together of the original stuff, because I don't want to read the New Age of DC Heroes again. I've read all that stuff.
True, true. I can totally understand that. I will fess up that I did make it to a Walmart over the weekend. I did see the and I went looking, of course, the comics, and I did pick up all four of the number ones.
Now, I heard they're really nice. What did you think of them?
I have barely looked at them, to be honest. They feel like a thin trade, you know, 100-page kind of a trade or whatever. The paper quality is okay. They've got kind of chapter breaks where the front cover, back cover maybe stuff would have been. Does seem to be a house ad or two in one or two of them. I haven't actually, you know, flipped through them and read them and stuff like that. I'm not sure which is the new stories and which isn't and whatnot, because I haven't paid that much attention. $4.99 for 100 pages is not a bad deal. The quality of the print thing is good. Is this going to get people hooked on comics? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Part of me wonders if DC, and this is me, I'm like, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I don't know if they're really trying to broaden the market, which I hope this is what they're intending to do. Or maybe they're just toying with it and just saying, you know, throw out some reprint stuff on the cheap over here, along with a few original things. If, you know, heaven forbid the direct market ever did implode, we have an outlet for comics. You know, here they are, you know, pick up 100-page stuff and we'll throw 20 new pages in there.
I certainly think it's not a bad idea to try. I think doing it to where it was not available to the direct market stores was not a good move.
I agree.
I don't think this is going to have any noticeable impact on the direct market sales.
I agree.
But that doesn't mean it's a bad idea.
Yeah, it's an idea, and I'm behind any type of an idea to increase readership. So I'm completely behind that. And one thing I would say that was a misstep, Marvel teamed up with Archie when they did their reprints with those little digest size things. And it was like 200 and something pages, and they were like $7 or whatever, or six. I don't know what they were, $6.99.
I have one of those around here somewhere.
Believe it or not, I bought the first seven. And they were stacking up, and I realized they're too small to read. The print's too small. It's made for kids. And Archie printed it, got them out. I saw them at my grocery store, not just at Walmart. There was no exclusive thing. the direct market could buy them and sell them. So I picked them up for $4 through Eric. And then I realized, I'm like, these really aren't for me. So what I did is I went to my CrossFit gym, some of the parents who had kids, I'm like, hey, give this to your kid. Give this to your kid. Hey, I know your kid likes the Marvel movie. So I'm trying to instill new readers on my own. I'm trying to increase the community with the kids.
That's cool. That's a great thing to do. What I found with that, if I recall, is there were a couple of stories that were done with full bleed art and better printing quality than the digest really kind of went through.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Some of them felt a little muddy and stuff, because some stuff, yep. And I think this is a problem with less experienced digital colorists, is the additive method of shining light and stuff on a screen produces fairly vibrant colors. You print that same thing on paper.
It looks different.
It looks darker.
Oh, yeah, way darker. So it's very noticeable if you have an inexperienced colorist, like you said.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I didn't buy it just because I don't normally go to Walmart. I thought about going out and picking them up. But I'm like, you know, really, I'm just in it to read it. So I'll just wait for a trade to come out and I'll pick it up from Eric on the cheap.
I picked them up because I was curious.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Nothing wrong with that. If you were buying like 10 of them and flipping them on eBay, you wouldn't be my friend right now.
No. I have sold – now, keep in mind, I've got somewhere over 65,000 comics.
Oh, yeah.
The entire time I've been collecting, I think I've sold maybe 3 to 5.
Yeah, that sounds about like me. I don't think I've sold anything. I sold some in a garage sale one time, and it was all my my spawns from way back in the day. And someone was rifling through my stuff when I had a garage sale. I'm like, and he only wanted my spawns, so I sold it to him.
I had an extra set of Death in the Family or something like that. And a guy I used to work with at the first comic store I worked at, he'd bought out the store and was opening it up or reopening it or whatever. Or okay. It was the replacement store. I forget the exact thing. And he had a spot to put those kinds of books, but no such books.
Ah.
And I'm like, here, I've got a set. Give me a halfway decent price, and it gives you something to put there. You're kind of a thing.
Oh, that's cool.
You know?
So, I mean, I was only joking. I'd still be friends with you. I don't get angry at those people. It's just like, sometimes I think it hurts the purpose of why the comics are there when people buy them all up, you know?
I agree with you. That's when people are going and getting these things for the sole purpose of selling them to somebody else at an exorbitant price, they've kind of missed the mark in terms of what the purpose of these things are.
Exactly. They're kind of hurting the market we're in when they're doing that. I'm like, yeah, if you want to pick one up and read it or flip it, fine. But don't pick up the whole bundle so nobody else who goes to Walmart can see them.
Yeah.
Especially not kids, you know?
Well, if you're almost at that point, it is a business model to buy stuff, preventing other people from getting it so you can sell it to them at an exorbitant price. I don't really respect that. I get it. And if somebody get something, says, okay, I've had it for a while, I'm done with it, now I'm going to flip it or whatever. But it's not, if they buy it with the, I'm putting it straight on eBay, I'm not so good with.
Flip side,
I will say I have bought stuff over eBay that way because I couldn't otherwise find it.
Yeah, I've bought up a lot of runs on there. People who've collected those runs of 1 through 60 of whatever series that I hadn't read, or I was trying to get caught up when I was getting back into comics in 2012.
I've gotten a couple of things off eBay for the Super Sentai stuff that I just couldn't get because I'm not over in Japan.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if they bought it to flip it, it worked for them. So there's an aspect where that can be a service to people.
It's true. It's the pure market economy there.
But I'd rather it not need the middleman.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So let's see. Coming up, we've got the Cowabunga teleconference that's going to be on Wednesday, August 22nd.
Yeah, looking forward to that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Particularly with some of the news of coming out of, you know, the Walmart stuff, the change at DC to 22 pages, other things of that sort. Plenty of things. And just kind of seeing how Eric and James over at Cowabunga, what they're thinking of these things, what they're planning on doing and such, and how the new store is working out for them.
Oh, yeah.
After the move and such. Should be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Then on September 2nd, that's a Sunday morning, and that's bright and early that morning. That's the deadline for the second Q&A episode. You put in the questions on the forum, I will answer them on the episode. And that's going to be to celebrate episode 1500, which will come out on October 12th. So that gives me a little time if I need to actually think up some good answers on these. So good questions, or just questions. I, you know, other people
some difficult ones.
no math questions, no physics questions, you know.
Comic questions.
entertaining questions. Questions I'll enjoy. And stuff exactly. If you're curious about. I mean, it's all good. And then, let's see. This episode goes out on the 9th. So that's after the preview spotlight this time around. We're not doing a teleconference in July because of Comic-Con. The next previews comes out, I believe, on July 25th, which means the clips will be due on August 4th, and then we'll have a teleconference on August 11th.
Cool.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Catwoman number 1 from DC, Cosmic Ghost Rider number 1 from Marvel, and Unnatural number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.